Hello there, and welcome to this next edition of Total Health with Dr. Cage, a podcast of health and wellness, human consciousness, as well as human potential and longevity. With all that I have written, published, and recorded, either in podcasts, YouTube videos, or my more in-depth courses, if you have followed any of my work at all, it would be difficult for you to have avoided hearing me talk about the importance of food quality for reaching your optimal state of health. One of the small subcategories in the larger subject of food quality is, what if your food itself is making you sick? What I mean by this is, what if something you are eating that should otherwise be extremely healthy, for example, organic or whole grain, grass-fed, completely natural food, and there you are thinking you're doing everything right, but for you, that food is actually a source of illness. If that were going on, how would you know? Well, stay tuned to this episode of Total Health with Dr. Cage, and you will find out. My July promotion for 15% off my services runs through the end of July 2023. That date is fast approaching. The details were announced in my most recent podcast. You can hear more of it there. Basically, send me an email with the words total pod in it. And then we'll communicate over which of my products or services you'd like to apply that discount to. I also have my ongoing offer for my free 5-page handout in high quality nutrition. So you just send me an email and ask for the nutrition handout, and I will be very happy to email it back to you. And yes, you can put both of those requests in the same email. All right. Some of you have may actually figured out that the main subject for today's podcast, just from my short introduction. If not, you don't have long to wait for me to introduce the subject of adverse food reactions. This is a more accurate umbrella term covering food allergies, food sensitivities, and food intolerances. These three categories of reactions are each regulated by a slightly different portion of our immune systems, and there is a great deal of overlap in symptoms between these three. Before we get into the subtle but important technical differences between these different types of adverse food reactions, I'm first going to present an overview of the kinds of symptoms and conditions that point us in the direction of starting to think that you may, in fact, be experiencing an adverse food reaction that might be part of your problem. For starters, adverse food reactions as a group can produce a low-level background of inflammation, which can disrupt virtually any organ or symptom in your body. There are several patterns, however, which are frequently seen, and that's where I'm going to focus my attention today. The more of these conditions or symptoms you have, the more likely it is that all or part, at least, of your health problems are being caused by foods. I'll begin with the gastrointestinal system. This is the name we give to the tube that runs completely through our bodies from one end to the other, from our mouth down to our anus. It includes the mouth, the esophagus, the stomach, the small intestine and large intestine, along with the major accessory organs of the liver, gallbladder, and pancreas. The only real job of the gastrointestinal system, or the GI tract as it's commonly called, is to deal with food. It breaks down and digests the food we eat. It absorbs the nutrients from the food we eat. It eliminates waste products associated with the food we eat. And it protects us from microscopic pathogenic organisms that could have come in with the food we eat, things like bacteria, viruses, and molds. The entire purpose of your GI tract then is to deal with food. The first place food goes when we eat it is into the GI tract. So if there is a problem with the food we eat, we would naturally expect some of the symptoms and problems to show up in our GI tract itself. All right, so let's review some of the main GI tract symptoms that we have seen to be associated with adverse food reactions. So this will include gas and bloating. This is especially true if it starts within an hour or even less after eating the problematic foods. Constipation or diarrhea can be a regular occurrence and states of alternating between those two. Abdominal pain. Early on, the pain might be very vague and general and hard to pinpoint to any one location. Later on, it can become extremely localized where you can point right to it with one finger. In advanced cases, the symptoms, these vague general symptoms, might progress to one of the more formally diagnosed or designated GI tract diseases. This can include gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD. This is also known by the more common term of heartburn. This is usually something that will begin with a burning, acid-like pain in your stomach or just above the stomach into your esophagus, and it will occur usually shortly after eating. It can be worse when you lay down. As a caution, you should know that pain isn't always the main symptoms of GERD. It might actually be coughing. When the acid from the stomach refluxes back up into the esophagus, the process which gives this condition its name, by the way, the highly acidic stomach acid usually causes burning because the wall of the esophagus isn't intended to be coated with acid. It doesn't have the same kind of protective layers that the stomach does. Once in a while, however, the esophagus doesn't seem to mind. But if the acid gets far enough up to the up inside the esophagus to irritate the trachea or airway to the lungs, which is right below the back of our mouth, right at the top of the throat, there, that acid can trigger constant low-grade coughing. I have seen a handful of these cases where coughing was a main presenting symptom. These patients are usually misdiagnosed, as most practitioners of all types tend to focus on the cough being some type of lung problem. After helping hundreds of patients with heartburn and GERD, I am actually under the opinion that all cases of GERD should be considered as an adverse food reaction until proven otherwise. Yes, I am fully aware that there are other possible causes of GERD, and they all need to be considered as part of the due diligence all practitioners should be practicing as they consider their differential diagnosis. Differential diagnosis, by the way, is the list of all the different things that might be causing the symptoms and conditions. But right now, in my experience over the last 20-some years, heartburn and GERD have proven to be the cause of adverse food reactions about 90% of the time or more. The next condition and symptom I'd like to present are ulcers. These are places where the stomach acid has eaten its way through the protective layers lining the stomach or upper end of the small intestine, causing extreme pain shortly after eating. There are associations of a bacteria known as H. pylori found in many cases of ulcers that have been biopsied. And the conventional medical community seems to be of the opinion that H. pylori causes ulcers. And if there are ulcers, there are H. pylori. In the world of natural medicine, however, we tend to say not so fast. in almost every other cause of so-called infectious illness, the immune system and tissue health need to already be degraded in order for the infecting organism to colonize. Most infecting organisms simply aren't able to get in and colonize our bodies if we have a strong, fully functioning immune system. So if the H. pylori got in, or any other infecting organism, the vast majority of time, the body, organ, or tissue in question is diseased in some way first, and then the organisms can colonize and get in and start holding their parties and so forth. Many of us natural health providers have observed that in a high percentage of cases of ulcers, food allergies, or other adverse food reactions of the immune system are also present. It is a known process that adverse food reactions can cause the inflammation and degradation of the GI lining, which can lead to ulcers, which are exactly the sorts of conditions that bacteria like H. pylori will find inviting. The natural treatment of ulcers is quite successful, and this will possibly make a nice podcast of its own in the future, but it may be worth an ebook all by itself, which I'm kind of leaning towards. So stay tuned, watch my website for information on that, perhaps later this year. The next major condition where adverse food reactions are almost always a part of the cause, or at least a major contributing factor, is what is known as leaky gut syndrome. This is a condition where long-term inflammation in the GI tract causes cycles of swelling and relapse, which ends up breaking the protein structures that hold the GI lining cells together. This causes microscopic leaks to develop between the GI cells, and that allows undigested food particles to enter the bloodstream, bacteria can enter the bloodstream, and it generally creates a whole body illness. The science behind leaky gut syndrome is quite solid. There are actually lab tests we can run to show it's taking place. It involves digesting a disaccharide solution of a molecule that normally our bodies cannot absorb from the GI tract into the bloodstream. And if after digesting that solution, within a few hours, it starts showing up in your urine, then we know you have leaky gut going on. The process to heal from leaky gut is slightly complicated but straightforward, and that is something that can't easily be covered in one podcast, so maybe not this one. Just know that healing from leaky gut is possible. If you've been told you have it and you're not better yet, then by all means, you need to understand that adverse food reactions are partly part of its cause, and if you contact me, we can work together to resolve that. Next, we're going to talk about the broad family of inflammatory bowel diseases. They all usually have a component of adverse food reactions going on. This includes things like irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS, colitis, Crohn's disease, diverticulitis, diverticulosis. These all tend to be more serious conditions, and you should be working with a natural health provider who is knowledgeable in the treatment of these if you've been told you have one of these conditions. Even if you were told by a gastroenterologist, yep, that's what's going on, make sure you don't put yourself on steroids for life, but in fact, you talk to a natural health provider. And if you can't find one, contact me and we can work together on that. All right, so that's what I have to say about all the things I've observed in my career associated with the GI tract, our first major step for food particles that enter our body to be processed. And if any of that sounds familiar, then we need to be talking about how to test you for adverse food reactions. Before we do that, I'd like to quickly run down some of the other major symptoms and organs that aren't associated with the GI tract, but where we see symptoms directly related to adverse foods. First, in the respiratory system, there can be coughing, as I mentioned, chronic bronchitis, chronic sinusitis, and asthma. All of these I've seen to be associated with adverse food reactions. The musculoskeletal system, rheumatoid arthritis is very often associated with adverse food reactions and joint pain. Various skin conditions such as eczema, psoriasis, acne, and dark circles under the eyes can all be caused by adverse food reactions. Dark circles below your eyes are also a sign of adrenal fatigue, adrenal burned out, long-term stress. So we can't just jump to the conclusion, oh, you have dark circles, you have food allergies. Headaches, especially migraines, are all very often triggered by allergenic or adverse foods. Weight gain, especially a slow, insidious weight gain, unexplainable by hormonal means or other causes, often will reverse when problem foods are identified and eliminated from your diet. So that gives you kind of a big picture of there's symptoms all over the body, especially the GI tract, that point to food being the problem. What I want to do now is quickly talk just a little more detail about the types of adverse food reactions. Food intolerances are the first I want to mention. These pretty much involve a lack of an ability to digest a particular food or food group. Lactose intolerance is possibly the poster child of this category. Lactose is an ingredient in milk. We all have the ability to digest milk as infants, but many people lose that ability or seem to lose that ability on becoming adults. There are some practitioners and scientists who think, well, that's not a disease, that could be normal development. Since as mammals, we may not be intended to consume milk after we're weaned, especially milk from another species. That said, the location of the enzymes for digesting and absorbing lactose on the little microvilli lining the small intestine suggests that we lose that ability because the ends of those microvilli can be damaged by inflammation. And basically the parts of our intestine that can digest these get worn away and we don't physically have them until we heal that GI tract lining. That in turn points to the probability that other adverse foods or other things causing GI tract inflammation may also be happening. And I can tell you that it's very seldom when I've ever tested for food allergies or intolerances that if someone is positive for the cow's milk dairy product family, that they don't also have something else. So I tend to lean towards that being the real cause. Now, food sensitivities can be a little more severe. They may induce an inflammatory response from the body, symptoms like pain and bloating. It's the food sensitivities, it's more of a localized immune response, similar to poison ivy, only it may be taking place, those kind of lesions inside your GI tract. Great deal of overlap in symptoms between food intolerances and food sensitivities. That non-specific immune system response is what causes food sensitivities. Symptoms of the food intolerance, that they're just not quite the same. When we listen to the patient's symptoms, I tend to notice a little bit of a difference. Food allergies involve the deepest layer of your immune system. This is called cell-mediated specific immunity. That means your immune system perceives of these things as a more serious threat than intolerances, more serious than sensitivities, and starts producing antibodies against foods. There are, just to be clear, three major types of food allergies. The first is known as IgE, allergies. These are the kinds of allergies that can cause sudden anaphylaxis, wheezing, and airway constriction. These are particularly serious. You may need Benadryl or epinephrine, possibly by injection, and need them quickly. These often require trips to the emergency room or urgent care. And most people find out they have an IgE food allergy the very first time they eat an offending food, which usually happens as children. So if you or your children or anyone you know has an IgE mediated food allergy, and oh yeah, you're allergic to that, the very first thing to do, it's very prudent to run the test panel that looks at 20 or 30 or so of the major IgE foods that are common, like shrimp and strawberries and peanuts and a few others, to find out if there's any others. Because if you have one, there may be more, and I often see that. The next type of allergy is called IgG allergies. These are chronic long-term allergies, sometimes called slow onset or delayed onset allergies. And this is the most common type of food allergy I find in dealing with adults and non-urgent allergies. Next, there is a third type, IgA. In theory, IgA antibodies are more specific to the lining of the GI tract. However, most of the available tests are not as extensive. They don't look as at many foods as the IgG tests, which are out there. They tend to cost a bit more. So as a result, I've never been able to run very many of them, and I'm not yet sure, at least in my practice, whether it's worthwhile to run an IgA food allergy and whether or not that shows us anything that the IgG tests don't. Testing for chronic food allergies is one of the most powerful tests I've run in my years of clinical practice. These tests are never really offered by the standard community blood testing labs. Instead, there's a handful of specialty labs around the country that this is pretty much all they do, or one of the main things they do is look at food allergies. I have tried pretty much all of those labs at one time or other, and I consistently use the one I have found to give the most clinically relevant results that helps patients get better. So by that, what I mean, somebody comes in the door, they have symptoms that suggest adverse food reactions, I run this test, we avoid the foods the test says, and within weeks to a few months, their symptoms go away, their condition starts to heal, and they just get better. So the lab I use, I like, I've tried all the others and don't get quite as complete a recovery among the patients. Food intolerances and food sensitivities don't have as many testing options available. And when I used one of the labs that tests for sensitivities, I found it didn't catch everything and I would still need to run the food allergy test. So that's why over the years I've gravitated to running the food allergy test first and very seldom need to run any other test. The price of these tests isn't real cheap. It's in the hundreds of a few hundred dollars range. The tests or results are extremely accurate. The one I look at tests for 190 different foods, and I've seen these help a lot of people. Once we find out what foods you're having adverse reactions to, the next question is, then what? How do we use this information to help you get well? Well, the first step, as I alluded to, is simply avoiding the offending foods, and you might need to do that for a few months. You might need to do that the rest of your life. I've had the most angry responses from patients when discussing food allergy test results than I ever have when I've told them about anything else. People have strong emotional relationships to food. And when I tell someone they have to give up their favorite food, they tend to get angry at me, not at their own immune system, because that's why the test results, they have a bar chart in their hands that says, okay, here is what your immune system thinks about that food you're eating. So the second step is to start to heal the damaged tissues, whether it's the GI lining, the lining of your respiratory system, or anywhere else. And that can take time, especially with the major inflammatory bowel conditions. 6 to 12 months is not uncommon. Third, and not everyone is a candidate for this last step, is to attempt to retrain the body's immune system so it doesn't respond to the adverse foods in the future. There's a variety of homeopathic methods, psychological and energetic techniques for this. And I've seen some of these techniques work for a small percentage of people. And I've never seen any one technique that works for everyone. So I have a couple more things to say about that. First, I don't even recommend you try these so you can go back on your favorite food that's causing you problems until you've avoided the adverse foods for a year. Next up is the fact that even if we turn off your body's immune system response to thinking that's a bad food, if that's a food that's been causing damage, there's no studies that say turning off those immune responses aren't going to allow the damage to continue undetected. That is a field, a subfield in natural medicine and food allergies and testing of these alternative techniques that has not been fully explored. And I tend to err on the side of caution. Okay. Hopefully this information in this podcast has been useful to you. If you'd like assistance taking the next step, please contact me. There's an email form on my website. I do a great deal of work virtually, meaning remotely through Zoom calls, and I can even arrange for testing kits to be sent to you. Of course, if you're looking for a good excuse to have a vacation in one of the most beautiful areas of the United States, i.e. Montana, then here you are. Simply come to Hamilton, have a visit with me, then stay a while and tour Montana. That's it for today. I have a request that you please subscribe to this podcast. You can do this on the Podbean website or from the Podbean app on your smartphone. Don't forget my July special, 15% off my services. And don't forget the high quality nutrition handout. You can send me one email about both things. So until next time, this is Dr. Cage saying good health.